Last week, if you were here, we kicked off the series by some challenging words of Jesus. At one point, he talked about how if you're coming to church and you want to bring an offering or a gift to God, or it doesn't even have to be church, but you're just bringing this something to God, whether it's your prayers, your worship, your money, whatever it is, yourself, and you're there and you're about to give it to God, and then all of a sudden you remember in your mind that there's something standing between you and somebody else in your life. There's like a conflict that's not been dealt with. There's something that hasn't been resolved. There's something that you've avoided. Jesus said, you need to go and deal with that first. And then you can come and bring your gift or your offering or yourself or your thing to me. And so we started with that powerful concept that God and Jesus really does care about the conflicts in our lives. And whatever you think of Jesus, maybe you're kind of new to church, or maybe you're here and you're still, there's still some big questions, like the whole Easter resurrection thing, not sure about that, or miracles, or all those kind of things. I think we can all agree that he's probably right on this one, because conflict in our life, when it's undealt with, when there's stuff going on between us and other people, and we're avoiding it, or we just don't know how to deal with it very well, it can just eat away at our lives like cancer. And so Jesus says, you've got to deal with it. And I know some of you came last week and you said, you came up to me afterwards after the message, after the service, and you said, man, I needed to hear that, but I did not want to hear that this week. Because somebody popped into your mind, and that was the question we left with last week. Just ask yourself, God, is there someone in my life that I need to go reconcile with? Is there someone in my life that I need to go and make amends with? Is there? It can be something big from my past. It can be something small. It could be a coworker that we just had a tiff last week, but it just didn't really get resolved well. Whatever it is, but is there somebody or somebodies in my life that I need to go deal with this conflict with? And for a lot of us, I think somebody came into your mind. Someone came into your head. And we left with this verse where Jesus said, this is from the Sermon on the Mount, he said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they should be called children of God. In other words, when we go and then we pursue that person that we have this undealt conflict with, and we try to make peace with them, there's no time in our lives where we're more like a child or daughter, a son of God. We're never more like God than when we're peacemakers in our lives. And yet making peace is really hard. It's not easy. It's like making furniture. I mean, it's how many of us know how to make furniture? Probably not many of us. I've tried it. It doesn't stand when I make it. Like it falls over. It doesn't look good. There's pieces that aren't in the right spot. It doesn't look like, and I don't know how to do that. I didn't grow up knowing how to do that. I've never been taught the skills of how to do that. I think we're all in that situation, and making peace is the same way. We don't have the skills. We don't know how to do it. We don't do it very good. When we try to do it, it doesn't look very good. Sometimes it's worse when we try to do it than when we don't. And so consequently, a lot of us ignore it. And yet, again, Jesus said, and I think we all deep down know, we can't ignore it. We've got to figure out how to make peace in our lives. And so today I want to get super, super practical, because last week we left and you probably had this like, oh yeah, I need to go do something. I probably need to have a conversation, but I don't know how, and I'm just not sure how to do it really well. And I've tried it and I never do these things really well. And so this week we're just going to look at some really practical advice from the Bible about how to make peace in our lives. Because Jesus said a lot about this. He said a lot about how to do this. Paul says a lot about this. Paul dealt with this all the time. He had conflict in his life. He had a major falling out with one of his best friends, this guy that he worked with for years. They had this major conflict, and it broke him up and split him apart. So he knows what it looks like. He led churches that had all kinds of conflicts in them. So he says a lot about this. So today, I'm just going to give you some really practical advice, and I want to give you four simple questions to ask as you navigate conflict, as you deal with it. And it comes up in our lives every day, whether it's with your roommates, with your spouse, with your kids, with your parents, with coworkers, with friends, whoever it is. I want to give you four questions to constantly ask yourself as you learn how to make peace with others. Now, the first question comes from Jesus. So it's his question. It's not my question. It's his question. So if you don't like it, you can talk to him about it. But it comes from that same sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. And let's look at a few verses from there. This is what he says in Matthew chapter 7. He says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." Now, this is a pretty famous verse. Most of us have heard this before. You might not even be a church person. Maybe you've not read the Bible a ton, but you've heard this verse. You maybe didn't even know it was Jesus who said these words, but he's the one that first said them. Don't judge others because you too will be judged. And essentially, he's saying, hey, I think he said this to all of us because he knew we like to be judges. We love to set ourselves up as judges. I tend to think that I'm a really good judge of other people. That I have a neutral perspective, that I can see everything right, that I know what the problem is, I know who is right and who is wrong, and what the right solutions to everything are. And especially when it comes to conflict with me and another person, I think that I'm the best judge to know what they did wrong and what needs to happen in this. And yet Jesus says, hey, in any situation, but probably he's thinking about these, in these kinds of situations, don't judge other people just because you got to know this. Whatever criteria or standards you use to judge other people are going to be the same standards and criteria that's used to judge you. Then he goes on, he says something really challenging. "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and you pay no attention to the plank in your own eye?" Probably heard this verse before, where Jesus essentially says, hey, and think about that other person that you've got a conflict with. He says, hey, here's what you're focused on. It's a little piece of sawdust that's in their eye. You are so focused on that, what they did, what she said, what he did, what he deserves, how he needs to apologize, how she needs to say she was wrong. I mean, you feel like you've got it all figured out, what the problem is and what the answer is, and the whole time you're focused on this little speck in their eye, and yet you've got like this really huge plank of wood in your own eye. He goes on, and look at what else he says. Next verse. "How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite." Remember, Jesus talking, not me. "You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." You see, it's simple. Jesus is essentially saying, you're trying to judge them, and you're focused on what they did and what you think the answer is, and you're focused on this whole thing that is all about them the whole time, and yet you've got this huge thing in your eye. Like, you contributed maybe more to the conflict than they did. That you're focused on their part, you're thinking about their blame, what they did wrong, their responsibility, how they need to fix it, and yet the whole time you've never stopped to think about what your part is, what you did, what the huge plank is in your own eye. And so the question that Jesus tells us that we should ask, this is the first question we should ever ask when we come into conflict, is simple. It's, what is my part? What is my part? What did I contribute? What did I say? What did I do? What's my fault? What's my responsibility? And I love those verses because, and that picture, that kind of crazy picture of somebody with a plank in their eye, I mean, we all know it's exaggeration, and yet what Jesus is saying is, look, you've got to understand, you can't even see the speck in their eye. You think you see it, but you can't even see it. Like, you can't even see the situation clearly. You can't see the conflict clearly. The only way that you're ever going to be able to see the conflict and the situation and what's happened between you and them, the only way you're going to actually be able to see it clearly is taking this out of your eye first. And the implication is, once you deal with your part and take the big old plank out of your own eye, you might see things really differently. In fact, you might not even see any specks anymore. So the first question we've always got to ask, and if we don't ask it, if we just move forward and we're focusing on them, then Jesus basically looks at you and he looks at me and he says, you're a hypocrite. Strong words, but that's what you are. You're a hypocrite if you're just focused on them and not on you. So first question is, what is my part? Second question is simple as well. What are my emotions? What are my emotions? What am I feeling right now? Ask yourself that this week when you start to feel your blood boiling a little bit because of what someone said or an email you read or something that happens. Just stop and ask yourself, what are my emotions? Why am I so angry about this? Why did we just have that big argument and I just cannot stop thinking about it as I'm driving home right now? Why am I replaying this in my mind? Why am I thinking about this so much? What are my emotions? And actually stop and identify what those emotions are. Are you angry? Are you frustrated? Are you disappointed? Do you feel wounded? Do you feel ashamed? Did something happen that opened up a wound from the past? And what are the emotions and feelings you have associated with that wound? Are you sad? Do you feel paralyzed? What is it? What identify those emotions? David from the Bible, David, King David, he did this all the time, and he would do it in his prayers to God. When there was some conflict between him and someone else, he would go to God and he would pray these prayers that became many of the Psalms that we have. And in those, he would identify and express his emotions. Listen to some words from Psalm 55. This is what it says in the beginning. Listen to my prayer, O God. My thoughts trouble me, and I am distraught because of what my enemy is saying, because of the threats of the wicked. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death have fallen on me. Fear and trembling have beset me, and horror has overwhelmed me. He's praying this to God. He's letting all his emotions and his feelings be known, and they're pretty strong and intense emotions to which we're going like, what is bringing all of this on? Well, later in the psalm, he tells us, look at what it says in the next verses. If an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were rising against me, I could hide. But it is you, a man like myself. Now he's not talking to God anymore. He's actually talking to one of his friends. It's you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship at the house of God as we walked about among the worshipers. He goes on, and what you understand is that there's this, been this betrayal, one of his best friends, one of his closest counselors, and we can read about this in the historical books, has betrayed him and deceived him. And so there's this huge rupture of a friendship. There's this huge conflict in his life. And it's wounded him severely. And so he's going to God and he's identifying and pouring out all of these emotions. And that's what we've got to do as well. Now, maybe doing it through prayer is one of the best ways. That's one of why the Psalms are great, reading through them pretty regularly. You can find the full gamut of emotions that we all go through from time to time. Maybe it's just journaling. However you do it, it's really important to stop and ask yourself the question, in the midst of the conflict or after the conflict, what am I feeling right now? And that's important for a couple of reasons. Number one, you might be so jacked up on emotions that you probably shouldn't respond to the conflict right now. Like, you might be so upset and tempted that you start writing the email back. Come on, we've all done that. You should not send it, right? Don't hit send right now because the emotions are too powerful. Or you get in this conflict and, you know, the voices start getting raised and you start yelling and things like that, and you just want to keep it going. And maybe at that point, you just got to call a timeout on yourself. Like, whoa, like I can feel my emotions right now. As I read her email and I want to email her back, I can feel my emotions right now. And if you can stop and identify them, they'll help you say, I need to calm down. We need to revisit this tomorrow morning or later. The other reason it's important to identify your emotions is because eventually you need to share those emotions. You need to be able to go to the other person when you do talk to them and say, this is how I felt. That's huge for me because I tend to be an analytical person, and I tend to process everything in my head, logically, analytically, not emotionally. I don't have emotions. They just don't exist for me. And so, or so I like to think, but it's not true. I do. And so what I've got to do when Janice, my wife, and I have an argument, like once every decade or so, no, that's not true. Whenever we have an argument, what we'll usually do, and this is mostly me, is we'll just kind of go to our corners. And I'll go downstairs, and she'll stay upstairs, and we'll just kind of be silent, and that's it. And we won't talk about it anymore. And then we'll wake up the next morning, and everything's fine, and we'll just assume it all went away. And just, like, that's the way, that's the great way that we deal with conflict in our marriage. And here's the deal. I need to be able to go back to her, and we need to schedule a time, a day later, whatever it is, and say, hey, we should talk about that. Like, we should revisit what happened there. And I need to be able to say to her, hey, this is how I felt in that moment when I said this. This is what was going on. And she needs to be able to acknowledge that. And then she needs to be able to say to me, this is how I felt. And I need to be able to acknowledge that. And we're not talking about blame at this point or anyone's fault or what happened or even how to resolve it. We're just acknowledging our emotions and saying to one another, I acknowledge that. Like, yeah, I can see how you felt that way. But see, when we acknowledge that to one another, we build a platform, we build a context to then begin making peace. But we can't do that until we first identified what those emotions actually are. So, the second thing that you need to do, first you ask, what is my part? The second thing is, what are my emotions? The third question, what are my intentions? What are my intentions? So, you've come to the point where you feel like there's somebody you need to talk to, there's something you need to deal with, and you've asked, what's my part? You've asked, what are my emotions? And you're ready to go have that awkward, tough conversation you're not looking forward to with them. Ask this question, what are my intentions? Can I honestly say that I want to understand her point of view as much as I want her to understand my point of view? Can I honestly say that I'm interested in knowing what his emotions are when we talk this afternoon as much as I want him to know what my emotions are? Can I honestly say that I'm going in with the idea that I want to gain a better perspective of what happened from their standpoint as much as I want them to gain a better perspective of what happened from my standpoint? Is my intention to do most of the talking? Most of the judging, most of the I know what went wrong and I've got the answer and here's how it needs to get resolved and fixed? Or do I genuinely want to understand and empathize with the other person? Do I genuinely want to be open to new insights? Do I genuinely want to say, hey, I think I've probably got this huge thing in my own eye, and so I know I need to take that out. And once I take that out and I actually listen to you, I might have a totally different perspective of what happened. The Apostle James, he was the brother of Jesus. He wrote a letter that's near the end of the New Testament. It's short. It's just 5 chapters. There's tons of really practical advice and wisdom in there and some things specifically about dealing with conflict. But I think one of the things that he says that's so powerful is great. Look at what he says. This is from James chapter 1. He says, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Just right there. Quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. What if that was my intention walking in? Hey, I want you to do most of the talking, and I'll do most of the listening. And not like the fake kind of listening, like I'm just kind of listening, so go ahead, get your thing out so then I can talk and share with you what my point of view is and what we're actually going to do about all this because I've got all the answers. But no, the genuine, true listening, like, yeah, there's a really good chance. I'm almost certain if I listen well that I will have a different perspective on this. And I'll have greater empathy for them and their point of view and what happened. Wouldn't it be awesome if when you met with somebody to talk through an issue that you went through with them, if they sat down with you and they said that that's what they wanted to do with you? Wouldn't it be awesome if they sat down and they said, hey, before you start talking, I just want to let you know that I really want to understand your point of view. And I think once I understand your point of view, I'll probably have a better perspective on this and it'll change how I saw all this. I mean, don't we want people to say that to us? Wouldn't it be awesome if every time we had a conflict, somebody said that to us? And if that's the case, shouldn't we be saying that to them? So what's my part? What are my emotions? What are my intentions? And then the fourth question is, what is my goal? What is my goal? What's the end result I'm hoping for? What's the end result I'm praying for? What's the end goal? And maybe it would be unrealistic to reach an end goal in one conversation with somebody. Sometimes it's possible. Sometimes there's a little tiff. There's a misunderstanding at work. You go circle back around to that person. Hey, I think I misspoke. I think I did something wrong. I'm sorry. You apologize. Forgiveness. You move on. Everything's good. It's all dealt with. Sometimes it's one conversation like that. Sometimes it's two conversations. Sometimes it's 10 conversations. Sometimes it's weeks and months of working through difficult conflicts in our lives. And the temptation because of that, because sometimes things are so big, is not to really have an end goal or an end result in mind. And yet we've got to have that because that's going to drive how we act and how we respond and how we listen the whole way. So what's the end goal? Now, I think we all fall into a few different categories when it comes to end goals. Some of us approach conflict this way. Some of us approach conflict like it's a win-lose scenario. It's a win-lose mentality that for you, that's the goal, is to win. Like you simply want to win what happened. You want to win the argument. You're the aggressive person. You're the assertive person. You're the competitive person. If you've got a competitive bone in your body, you're probably like this. Like you're just out to win most of the time. And whenever you go in with that attitude, that usually means the other person is going to lose. And so you'll charge right in, and the goal is to let them know what they did and what happened, and you've got the answer. And that usually means winning an argument and being right and showing them that they were wrong. And so it's a win-lose scenario. Now, you wouldn't frame it that way. You wouldn't say, oh, I want to win. I want them to lose. But that's often what ends up happening. Now, on the flip side, some of us approach with a lose-win mentality. A lose-win mentality. Now, you might be the passive person. This would be you. Or you're the person that avoids conflict at all costs, even if it means that the other person wins and you lose. You would rather lose. In fact, you would rather lose and even play the martyr. You'd rather lose and most of the time say, yeah, I guess it was my fault. Or you'd rather take all your emotions and just stuff them down deep down inside because you'd rather do that than face the conflict because you're scared to death of facing the conflict. So you'll lose all the time and you'll let them win if it means not dealing with the stress and the pain and the complexity and the messiness of conflict, which makes you a lose-win person. Now, then there are the lose-lose people. You approach conflict in this manner. Now, don't get me wrong. Everyone at some level wants to win, but you're the passive-aggressive type where something happens, and then there will be times where you'll charge it head-on, and then you'll come back. Or instead of talking to the person that hurt you or that you feel like you have conflict with, you'll just go talk to everyone else about that person, which means you never really allow them a chance and you a chance to reconcile with them or deal with them, and yet you're talking to everyone else about it and you're still hanging on to it, so you're really never allowing yourself a chance to get past it. just makes it a lose-lose scenario. Everybody ends up losing in that case. And all of us have tendencies in this direction from time to time. So, what should be our goal? Well, hopefully you've guessed by now it's not one of these three options. And hopefully you've guessed what the fourth option could be and should be. It's a win-win scenario. But ultimately, what if we went into every conflict, every time we were trying to make peace with someone and asked the question, how do we leave this where everyone wins? How do we figure out what it looks like for everyone to win? What does a win look like for you? And what does a win look like for me? And how can we resolve this in such a way that everyone wins? That's really, really hard to do. I'll share a quick story from my own life. I guess it was 4 years ago. I was invited by a close friend of mine, another pastor, to preach at his church and to preach there for 3 weeks. And he's somebody who's been a friend for a long time and I count as a close friend. And so I had this idea for these three sermons, a series to do and to preach at his church. I went and we had lunch one day. I shared with him all my ideas. Here's what we're going to do. I think it'll be fun. It'll be different. It'll be great. And here's the passages we're going to do each week. Here's the application points. Here's all the stuff I'm going to hope people get. We actually do try to think of those things ahead of time. So I said, here's all. And he was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Let's do it. It'll be great. So I went and I preached, and the first week was great. Lots of discussion, lots of good feedback afterwards. Went back the second week, preached the second sermon. And immediately following the sermon, my friend came up and he walked to the front and he shared with the whole congregation that what I had just shared in the sermon, the ideas that I had just shared, were questionable, were not biblical, and were not shared by the church. It's like, whoa. And then later that day, they had an emergency elders meeting where he and their elders got together and they decided to uninvite me from speaking there the third week and to have somebody else come in. And then they read a statement before their church the third week that said that the message I'd given the week before was unbiblical, was uncharitable, and was not the message that I had told the pastor that I was going to give. It's like, whoa. I mean, I've never had this happen to me before. And now you're all going, what did he preach on? Like, what the heck? And I assure you, it was nothing crazy. It wasn't questionable. In fact, I've preached the same series here at our church. It's called In the Beginning. You can go back to our sermon archive and do the podcast and listen to the series, and you'll think, oh, what the heck? Why was that? I don't know what the big deal was about that. Obviously, I learned the messages weren't bad. It was just not the right messages for that congregation at that time. But here's the deal. It wasn't about like sermons or theology or all that. I mean, that was all wrapped up in that. But I share that story with you not to say, hey, listen to this thing. I share it to say there was this huge deal between me and one of my close friends who I felt in a way betrayed me. I mean, publicly in front of a bunch of people, like, I questioned my character in a pretty significant, embarrassing, like shaming kind of way. And then how it was dealt with. Because essentially what I was told was, here's what you, and this was the part that I think hurt me the most. So don't worry about the sermons and all that. Here's what hurt the most. I was told, here's what you did, and here's what we've decided is the solution to what you did. And nobody, and I told my friend this that week when we were going through all of these discussions about this. I said, hey, you have never once, and nobody in any of these conversations has ever once asked me, how can we resolve this in a way where everybody wins? What would it look like? Here's our tension, and here's our problems, and here's what a win would look like for us. What would a win look like for you? where nobody ever stopped and asked me that question. And that's so convicting for me because for me, I think I tend to be like that most of the time where I go into conflicts and I've got the idea of what happened, here's what you did, and here's what the answer is. And I never stop to ask the question, hey, well, what are my emotions? What's my part? All those things. But then, hey, what would an end goal look like where we all win? And you know what the end goal looks like where everyone wins, where it's a win-win scenario all the time? It's not winning the argument and it's not winning who was right and who was wrong. You still have to sort through all those things, but eventually a win-win scenario is about reconciliation. I mean, that's what it's about because Jesus didn't say, hey, when there's conflict, I want you to go and deal with it and go and be right to that person. He says, no, go and be reconciled to that person. And so what would that look like if we said, hey, there's going to be some right and wrong, and there's going to be talk about misunderstanding, and there was miscommunication, and someone's feelings were hurt, and my feelings were hurt. There's all those kind of things, and we have to work through those things. I mean, conflict is messy. We have to work through those things. But how can we always keep the end goal before us? What does it look like to move towards reconciliation? What does it look like to always be moving towards a place where whatever broke our relationship between us as friends, us as spouses, us as roommates, whatever broke it, how can we repair it? How can we make peace? How can we be reconciled at the end of this? Because that's the only way that everyone wins. So those are the four questions that you need to ask. I want you to ask them this week as you have conflicts that arise, as things pop up. Ask simply, what's my part? What did I contribute? What are my emotions in the midst of this? What are my intentions? And then what's my goal? And as you ask those four questions, never forget God's example to us. Because he looked at you and he looked at me and he said, I will take on their part. And I will let love guide all of my emotions. And eventually, I'm going to send my son down there so I can empathize with them. I can listen to them. I can identify with them. And I can fully understand their perspective and what they've gotten themselves into and what has actually happened. And the end goal is always going to be reconciliation, so much so that my son will die on a cross for them so that I can be reconciled to them. That's what God did for each of us. And that's what we as followers of him can do when we go to make peace with other people in our lives. Let me pray. Father God, I pray right now that if there's any situations, if there's any hurts, if there's any conflicts, that we would be able to take them and in a sense surrender them to your will in our lives. And God, I pray that you'd help us to ask these questions that are not easy. They're tough. They're challenging. They're convicting. Show us our part. Show us our intentions. Show us our emotions. And show us what our goal should be. And God, as we do that, if there's stuff that we're holding on to that we need to let go of, if there's hurt, if there's pain, if there's pride, if there's stubbornness, God, force our hands open if you have to. Help us to surrender to you and trust in you and trust that as we reconcile to people in our lives, we'll know true life and peace and we'll know our reconciliation to you even more. I pray this in your name. Amen.